In summer, a snow, and in harvest, a rain. So honor befits not a fool to attain. As sparrows do hop and as swallows do fly, a curse comes with reason or just passes by. Proverbs 26, verses 1 and 2. The Word Green version of 2004. That's our daily scripture for the daily proverb for today, little children. And continuing in our article, Trojan War, chapter 10, from 2015, this graph that I made of Mr. Whitelaw's evidence that he found, but you know what? His evidence was obtained. I'm trying to find out which picture it is here. Is it this one? This one, yeah. Okay, yeah, the evidence, all of Mr. Whitelaw's evidence, he got it from the famous scientific journal, Radiocarbon, because there were 30,000 measurements at the time that he did his study that had been made throughout all of the history of the journal Radiocarbon, 30,000 measurements. So he charted them, and the numbers that he found every 500 years that he tallied for those 500-year periods, for periods before the present time, of 2,000 years before present, which would be the time of Christ, for example, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, on this graph, each dot represents one of his histogram rectangles. So the number of samples per year at the time of this event, which is shown here as a sudden rising in all life forms, just about the time exactly, in fact, of the deluge in our chronology. Noah's Ark, the deluge that was global. That's the other thing. This chart is shown to be valid in North America and South America and Africa and Europe. All of those places are shown on this graph. And also, it was true of the marine specimens. I mean, there were marine specimens that were more than 50 feet above sea level. They say they've even found seashells on top of Mount Everest, for that matter. But there were sea fossils, you know, that could be tested, and that were tested for radiocarbon to date them. And all of these are shown on the graph here, the marine specimens 50 feet above sea level. That's shown in one color here. And the marine specimens that were ever, you know, the other marine specimens that were not necessarily 50 feet or more above sea level. But they did find marine specimens above sea level. That's the first obvious important point there. That also is consistent with the deluge, because how do these fossils get above sea level? Now, in the case of mountains, could the mountains have been thrust up into the sky that quickly after the deluge in just a few thousand years? 5,000 years? Is that enough time for mountains to have gone from below the sea level all the way up, if there had not been a deluge, to the height of Mount Everest? Or is it more likely that the deluge was, or does it seem just as believable that the deluge, you know, occurred and was a real event? Of course, also, we're not discussing it today, but in the article, The Ark of Urartu, I get into the topic of how many flood legends there are around the world, and it's been documented by different scholars to show that virtually every culture around the world has a flood legend of a global flood. So, I mean, there's a lot of proof of the things that the Bible says, right? But the thing is, like Jesus said, let him that can make room for it, make room for it. Not everybody has the room within their lifestyle or within their belief system to believe the Bible and to believe so many different things that are part of that teaching, including Noah's Ark and the deluge. Now, about 5,000 years ago, okay, we haven't even come to it yet. Just to finish off this paragraph 2 of chapter 10, the publication Radiocarbon is a world-renowned journal that reports on work done by carbon-14 dating. And I've been doing, just yesterday, a lot more research again, searching more and more for the Iron Age radiocarbon, because it's relevant to the time of Shishak, and I found something I would like to show you. About that, again, another thing that confirms our dating of Shishak, but there were, at the time of Mr. Robert Whitelaw's work, 30,000 results that had been published in that journal, Radiocarbon. It's called Radiocarbon, and then there's volume, we're up to something like volume 50-something now, I think, in that journal, probably rapidly approaching volume 60 or something like that, or the, I don't know if we're into the 60s yet. I don't think so. The last one that I've been obtaining articles from is in the 50s, but 30,000 results have been published at the time of Mr. Whitelaw. At that time, there would not have been as many volumes as there are now, because the work goes on. But of those 30,000 results that he found, he cataloged them all, and the results are shown on his chart that we saw yesterday also, showing, and I was, the problem I was having on the, with my graph was I was not realizing that it only went up to 2000, and that also that this per day, let's see, 5, how many per day? Yeah, it's it goes up to about 8.8 per day is the maximum prior to the year 2000. 0.8 samples per day that have been measured and entered into the journal. 0.8 per day compared to this histogram chart for Eurasia, for example, around 2000, it's about 300, 400 almost, so that's getting up towards 400 would be 0.8 per day. 400 divided by 500 years, per year. It's a per year chart, isn't it? Yeah, samples per year, because there weren't as many samples to chart how many measurements came from every day in history, because there were only about, as the other histogram of Mr. Whitelaw showed, this one, which I converted into a line drawing here, but on his chart he showed that there were only as many as in each of these groupings, about 300 or so at the most, 400 at the most, measurements that have been made in a 500 year period that had fallen in that 500 year. They weren't made back then. Obviously, these measurements were not made in ancient times. They were made recently, or in the time of Mr. Whitelaw, or prior to him. The measurements were made in the radiocarbon, but they obtained results that fell into these 500-year periods. So these were ancient samples that they found, and So of those, in those five, in each width of each histogram bar here is 500 years wide. So within 500 years, there were only 400 measurements that fell in that range at the most on this graph, for example. Some of them had a few more than that, but and some had much less than 400 that had originated in that period of 500 years. So if the world were random, these results on this graph would have been, it just would have been a flat graph, right? Every bar would have been the same height if it were a random world. But we see there's a trend where right at the time of 5,231 years before 1950, which is the year 3282 BCE in our chronology, right at that time, there's a spike with the number of creatures, animals and humans and everything, trees as well, all the plant life and animal life. There's a trend where it's rising just before that time of the deluge, and then it suddenly drops to next to nothing in the next 500 year period. But it wouldn't be nothing, because in 500 years after the deluge, there'd be quite a few new trees and new plants, new animals as well, that would be produced from the animals that have been saved by the ark, and all these things. There are many scientific areas of study related to the ark too, such as how did Noah get all the animals into the ark? And the answer is, of course, that they didn't all come from the they didn't all go into the ark exactly as we see them today. They reproduced later in their families, and there are families of animals that can be produced from a pair. In the case of many, or a lot of genetic variety, let's say, yeah, there's a lot of genetic variety that can come from a male and female pair. So Whitelaw's chart here, what we've been talking about, is that the world wasn't random, but even the results of the radiocarbon journal itself showed that there was, in fact, apparently an event called the deluge. And there's an abundance of life, he found, at a certain point in history that he called correctly, also the time, preceding the global deluge. And it all disappeared at that time. Yeah, there was a sudden drop, sharp drop on the graph. Of course, we know it went to zero, but because it was a 500-year period, he was counting up. And of course, radiocarbon's not exact either. So it shows that there's a much less frequency of measurements found in the time just after the time that we call the time of the deluge. So that's remarkable. It proves, this is more proof, it's more evidence. Now, I didn't know any of this when I was doing the chronological studies that determined the date of the deluge. I didn't know any of this. I just found out, this is just a confirming piece of information that I found out about later. But this confirms our chronology. So we can look for things that confirm our chronology, right? It's like all of life. We can look for things that make us feel good by confirming what we already know is true. Or we can look for things that make us feel bad and that try to change us to be worse people, to be bad people. And the danger is that if we don't focus on what keeps us grounded in good values, which are taught by Jehovah and expressed in his word, the Bible, the good values that come from knowing about the true God and about all of the faithful records that are contained in the Bible that were faithfully kept. It's the only religion that faithfully kept all these things over such a long period of time. Then if we don't focus on those good things, there's a danger we will become, or we already are, corrupted. The radiocarbon, in this case, was what Mr. Whitelaw used to verify the timeline, right? And we, meaning me, made this other graph that I showed you also, which converted his histogram, which were shown as dots here, into, is that, I'm trying to think, were the dots exactly, or were the dots representing, the dots were either the, I'm trying to think, they're either the midpoint of each histogram or something connected to the, maybe the difference between the different histograms. I'm not sure what the dots represented on this graph, but I found out after. I thought yesterday that it wasn't exactly accurate, but I think it is accurate. This projection of it going up to 0.7 or 0.8 is a projection. There's no dot there. The dots were down here, close to 0.5. That's where the data were. But in order for it to get up and come down, I calculated that if the histogram is the area under this graph, then I calculated that this is what the graph had to look like. And that, I just calculated it by eye. I just said, okay. And I drew the lines through the points to make it so that the area in between the dots, or on 50% either side of the dot, between it and the next dot, would be what the graph showed in the histogram version. So that's how this graph was made. It was made from Mr. Whitelaw's chart that we already looked at also, the histogram chart. And Whitelaw's radiocarbon dates chart was from 1975. That's important, 1975. So that's 50, almost 50 years ago, 49 years ago. So we've finished now paragraph 10.4 of that article. So the evidence is that about 5,000 years ago, all or most of life, apart from the animals in the ark and the people in the ark, ceased to exist on Earth. In figure 10, we compare, as we already discussed, Whitelaw's catalog with the deluge dating of the Blessed Genealogy, 3282 BCE, in order to show that they agree very well, the number of samples lessening sharply at that point, whereas prior to the deluge, all types were increasing. The vertical dashed line at 5232 BP is seen as global. Yeah, that's the other point. It's a global phenomenon also. That's the thing that this chart also shows. The chart made from the radiocarbon measurements that were published in the journal Radiocarbon were the only data points used to make Whitelaw's chart. And that is what's seen to show that the deluge is in fact true. Okay, trees also, which we consider in chapter 12, vanished during that time of the deluge, as they would, because most, you know, trees can't live underwater. And the deluge went on for like a whole year, something like a year is long enough to kill all plant life on Earth that's existing above the, you know, above the sea level. So we are done our study for today. I wanted to get it done early. I've been going to bed later at night every night, and partly it's because I don't need to sleep. It's like my health has gotten vastly better. I still have issues, like I've got I got an itchy spot which wants, it's trying to, on my hand, trying to break out. There's a spot trying to break out with eczema on my hand, so I've got to keep cream, my vitamin E cream on that. It prevents it breaking out, but it's so itchy. And it's just a patch that doesn't have any real evidence of anything. You can't see anything. It's just itchy. And I know if I don't keep the cream on it, it's going to break out in little bumps. Because I've got this type of eczema that's little coin-shaped, numular, it's called. But they're very tiny bumps that come up. And it's so itchy that, you know, you don't want it to erupt on your skin. It's already itchy, though. So I'm not sure if I should just let it erupt and then put the cream on. But I think I'm trying to prevent it. But it is... It goes away in a couple of days with this cream, too. It's an amazing cream, the vitamin E cream that I use. Chasson makes it. Vitamin E Age Renewal Cream, 25,000 units. That's what that is. But let's talk about the radiocarbon. I've been so thrilled. I found, and hopefully it'll all pop up when I click on my preview program here. There's something. Vanderplicht. 2009, the Iron Age Around the Mediterranean is one publication. Just popped up. I've enlarged it too much here, I think. Can we center this? Let's see. There we go. See. And then what? Then what? What's in this? Oh, let's move it this way. Okay. Yeah, so they don't have knowledge, or maybe they do now, but they don't have, at the time of this publication, any knowledge of our chronology. Yet they were saying that Iron Age 2A began about 980, which is the beginning of Iron Age 2, in other words, the end of Iron Age 1, which was 1B. From 1B to 2A, or 1 to 2, Iron Age 1 to 2, the transition occurred about 980, they're saying, according to the chronology of Amahai, if I'm pronouncing his name correct, Mazar. Whereas Mr. Finkelstein was saying that transition was about 60 years lower. But don't forget, every one of these people has believed that Shishak was 925 or so, instead of 7, or instead of 973, which Shishak is in our chronology. So they have Shishak 50 years lower. So for them, it's a different thing. They have everything. There's pressure on them to push everything down 50 years. But for them to still have 980 as the date of the transition is proof of our chronology, because in their chronology, they have to look for a different layer in the city, a later layer that's on top of that other layer that we believe is the invasion of Shishak into the whole Levant region around everywhere, you know, on the east coast of the Mediterranean. Shishak invaded at some point. Now, in our chronology, that occurs right at the Iron 1 to 2 transition, whereas in their chronology, it doesn't occur at the 1 to 2 transition, because they've been pushing that transition. They've been pushing the transition down, but they've also got a lower chronology. But now they're trying to push that Iron 1 to 2 transition even lower, so that Shishak won't even be involved in that transition. But Bruins has shown here also, in this graph, at Tel Rehov, which is a very well-documented site where they've done radiocarbon, D3 is the destruction layer. And the earliest date from D3 that you could get is about 1000 BC. But because of the calibration curve wiggling, you could get a point as low as 950 here also, or even lower. for D3, but and D2 also goes up. Okay, but we don't care about D2 as much. But level 6, the start of level 6 is exactly the beginning of iron 2A, or in our chronology, that's exactly the time of Sheshach, 973, or very close to it. So level 6 began as a new level of the city after the destruction by Sheshach at Tel Rehov, in this case, the city of Tel Rehov. Level stratum, that is, number 6, comes just after. So the Iron Age transition occurs from Iron Age 1 to 2 in the level just below level 6, which would be level 7, or D3 in this case, it's called. And even D2 evidently is connected with that earlier time, but not necessarily, because you see the graph shows that D2 could go way down over because of the calibration curve. You know, it can go way down to 920 or something. It's hard to say from because of this wiggle in the calibration curve around 970. That's the problem that's causing some of these results to be ambiguous, but they don't present any objection to our chronology. It's just that they allow other people to suggest a lower chronology. That's from Bruins. Well, what did Vanderplicht say? I know there's other things that are more important to look at, but... Well, yeah, I think this is an important paper, the one by Vanderplicht, because... Well, he shows D3 right here, yeah. And then he shows stratum 6. So these are the radiocarbon results that we just looked at, probably similar to them anyway. The boundary is here, which is about, again, 970 or something close. Well, that's a result we looked at before from Tel Rehov right there. That's the one we presented in the Crucible article right there, I think. This one with a peak around 970. But we also have D3, which shows that the area of D3 predated 970 or 973 in their modeled dates. But those aren't even the graphs I wanted to show you. Let's see, what's this? Bruins and Vanderplicht. Yeah, well, Bruins presented another chart here where he showed... This is from Tel Rehov too, isn't it? Yeah, this is from Tel Rehov, and he shows D6, D4, and D3. And then D3 is the one that is just before the level 6, which the D3, that is, to level 6, is the iron 1 to 2 transition, which is exactly 970. Or not, well, 970 would be here, actually, on this graph. Yeah, very close. Very close, again, to being right. So, the radiocarbon doesn't pose many problems, but there's a phenomenal article by Lee, Sharon Lee, 2013. And in that article, he says the 1B to 2A transition starts between 987 and 947. That looks like very close to, that'll be a transition around 967, which is very close to 973, isn't it? And so that's in the 68% range. So it's well within, we're well within that range of 68% of all results fall within that range, statistically speaking. For a normal distribution, but here we go. What else does he say? Well, the end of that transition, too, from 1B to 2A, is the end of it, right, is here, is the previous one. The end he gives first, 951 to 917. So that transition to iron 2A ended, he's saying, sometime... Well, this is, again, statistical. 68% fall within the range of 951 to 917, so it could be 973 when it ended, even. the transition, but we don't think the transition ended at 973, so this is reasonable that the transition came much, it ended much later than 973, because after all the cities were destroyed, it would take a while to rebuild and to get all the new pottery from the next phase of Iron Age. It occurred to me yesterday, too, that maybe King Solomon, I want to show Finkelstein's remarkable graph, if I've got it here. I think this is it, maybe Kerbet Kayafa. Not sure. He gave it I can look for it. I would like to show you this. Let's see. Finkelstein's table, maybe. Yeah, this is it. This is it. The table. I wanted to show you from the work of Mr. Finkelstein. Look at this. This is from, yeah, radiocarbon dating, 2010. The Iron Age in the Levant. Look what he's got here. I think I did the averages here. Late Iron. Late Iron 1. I was able to find a graph. Maybe this isn't the one, but early Iron 2A. The transition 960. Yeah, this is not the one. This is not the graph. Yeah, there was a remarkable graph that I had. Is this it here? And let me look at my... No, I need to look at my... Yeah, this one maybe. Or this one. No, it's... I know where I should be looking. I need to look... Well, I need to look at these illustrations that I made from the articles that I was looking at before. We're out of time today. But anyway, I found another place where the average was exactly right. Maybe it's here. Time's up? Our time's up in 1 minute. Let's see what we got here. Oh, yeah. He looked at other data from... this is Mazar's... These are Mazar's results. Yeah. I remember that. Okay. I looked at all these results, and I don't see any problem with our chronology, even though there are different results. Oh, we showed the door, even it was agreeable to it, but that's it for today. I'll look for this again. August 13th, 2024, of the Common Era. The time is 19:27 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Just so I don't run out of time before I say that. But that's all for today, and... I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Have a wonderful time at what you're doing today. And what else are we... I love you very much, of course. Thank you for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Lib Dusty and this is Cassie. They're saying bye for now. That was paragraphs 1 through 5 of the article Trojan War, but, and also some radiocarbon research. Many different sites to look at in Israel, as were tabulated here by Mr. Mazar.